Welcome to Inside the Business of Sports. I'm Mike Carlisle, and I am joined by my co-host and my mentor, Jim Kaler. As always, Jim, how are you doing this morning?
You know, it's a great day to be a Viking. No, it's all is good. All is good, and it's good to be back.
Yeah, it's very good to be back in studio. We've had a lot of fun doing this podcast so far, and we have got a very exciting topic today. Not everybody might find it exciting, but once you actually get into the weeds and kind of understand what ticket sales is, it is a different world. So, Jim, before we start diving into some little Q&A type stuff, ticket sales, give me a brief overview for somebody like myself not too long ago of what ticket sales actually is.
Well, you know, as you already have heard, to me, ticket sales is the bread and butter of the sports business industry, because without ticket sales, we don't have fan engagement, we don't have broadcasting revenues, we don't have concessions, we don't have sponsorships. The whole ecosystem falls apart. And most of our listeners are familiar with ticket sales because they've held a ticket to a live sporting event or a theater or an entertainment event. But, you know, part of this program is really allowing people to get a deeper insight and behind the scenes look at the business side of the sports and what ticket sales are all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So ticket sales, like when we think ticket sales, at least for me as a young person, you know, coming up in the sports and entertainment management business, is I've never thought of ticket sales as being more than just selling a ticket here and there. But there's actually several different types of ticket sales. You're going to have individual ticket sales, group sales, mini plans, season ticket sales, premium seating. Like all of these things are drastically different in the ways that we're going to approach selling these tickets. And, you know, somebody who's a layman to this, they're not even thinking about the different types of seats and the different types of packages when it comes in with ticket sales.
Yeah, you're right. And the one that we didn't go deep into in our course is the secondary market. So a lot of our listeners anymore aren't buying their tickets directly from the club or the theater. They're buying them on the secondary market. And in a lot of cases, they're paying a premium to get a better location from someone that owns a season ticket, and they're reselling their tickets. So all kinds of different facets to the industry when it comes to ticket sales.
All right. So I know you have some thoughts, and I brought this up because I kind of wanted to start to pick your brain. I know you have some thoughts on how you market group sales and how that's going to be a key component for the program at Cleveland State. So why is group sales such an important thing to you, and how is that going to affect what we're trying to do at Cleveland State?
Well, I like to use an NBA arena as an example. But to go back to my days at the Cavs or the Cavaliers today, ideally, they're going to save about 20% of their seating inventory for group sales. And the reason behind that is it's a way to get new bodies into the building. It's a way to get people that may have never been to a Cavs game out to the event to see what it's all about. And group sales plays a big role in selling out your venue. The key in this industry is sellouts. And I like to refer to a guy by the name of John Spolstra. John was the president of New Jersey Nets. And his son, Eric Spolstra, is actually the head coach of the Miami Heat today. But John is the Zen guru in the history of our industry when it comes to ticket sales. And he was always a big believer that you want to save 20% of your inventory for groups, because they play a key role in getting new attendees out to your events. And what you do with those attendees after they experience as a group, they become part of your future marketing plans. And how do you take somebody that came to a Cavs game in a group of 20, usually groups are 20 or more, and they'll get a discount up to 20%. But how do you begin the relationship there to then take them into a subscription plan where not only are they going to improve their seat location, but they're going to become a bigger stakeholder with your organization.
Yeah. And you brought up some stuff that, like, when you have a large group like that, obviously you can find a way to get discounts, which is important for a lot of people. And I think is an important aspect of what it is that the team is trying to do. So you bring in this large group. How many people from that large group is an organization like the Cavaliers hoping to retain, to bring back and continue to sell tickets to? Because are they expecting to get all 20 every time?
No, not obviously. That would be utopia if you got into a situation like that. But really, Mike, if you go back to the strategy behind group sales, a big part of it is having a good database and knowing who your group leaders are. So if you and I were to put a strategy together for an NBA team, we would keep a healthy database of group leaders. Big challenge there is that your group leaders turn over. So you might be your son's youth basketball coach. And I know you've got kids and you coach your son in sports. And let's say you're the coach of his sixth grade team. Well, a year from now, you might not be the coach. So a lot of it is just staying connected to the leaders of these groups so that you can continue to market to them year after year. And groups like to change what they get out to. One year, if you're the head of HR for a small company and you like to take the whole company out to a sporting event, it might be basketball one year, baseball the next year. Heck, it could be Cedar Point the following year. So the dynamics of group sales are not just limited to sports, but we see it in entertainment attractions and amusement parks across the country.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Actually, I have a little anecdote. I was sitting in class the other day. Excuse me. Sitting in class, and we're just getting out, and I get a phone call. Phone number I don't recognize. I don't recognize a lot of phone numbers here in the Cleveland area. Everybody's got 216, and I am drastically different. But it's a gentleman on the other line from the Cleveland Monsters asking how my experience was. He saw that I took the six of us out to a Monsters game, and how was my experience? Did I enjoy it? When can they expect me back? And all of those things. So you can see kind of the way that's going to tie in. Hey, we want to have a database. They're going to have my information because I got the tickets. They can reach out and they can try to find ways. They're going to drive me back to that arena.
Absolutely. So one, I'm glad to hear you got a call the day after the game. So that means that their marketing team is giving their sales folks good leads, and hopefully they won the game. Did they win the game that night?
They did not win the game. They were up for a while, but they were unable to finish it out.
All right. So my guess is you probably weren't sitting in the seats super close to the ice because you were in a group. Were you up in the upper bowl?
We were in the club seats.
Okay. So you did well, but that sales rep is hoping that you had a good experience, and no better time to call you than coming right out of that experience, because they're going to want to get to know a little bit more about you. Are you the type of person that might be a prospect for a 10-game plan? Okay. And if so, that individual is going to invite you down to the arena as soon as they can, because they want to show you what type of inventory they might have available on a 10-game plan. And if they can get you hooked on minor league hockey in Cleveland, and as you continue to grow your career, they're probably going to want to take you from a 10-game plan to a half-season plan, and then from a half-season plan to a full-season tickets. And as you work your way up in the food chain of subscription plans, you're going to get more and more benefits that are associated with the different plans.
Yeah. And I think the model is definitely there. Like you brought it up. You want to talk to these people directly after they go to these games, because it's still fresh in their mind. Like it was still fresh for me because you brought it up. I have three kids. We took the kids out to their very first hockey game. They loved it. They didn't know anything about the game, but it's incredibly exciting. And then when you can get a lead like me, a, you know, 30, mid 30s, person with kids who is out there to have fun. Like, you can really leverage that and work on that to sell those tickets. But selling tickets doesn't only include sporting events. So how does ticket sales kind of fit into that entertainment side of our curriculum at Cleveland State University?
Well, if you're now in the database, let's say of the Cavs and the Monsters and even the Charge, because you're part of the Rocket Sports Group database, their job is to get to know you as well as they can. So if you're a subscription holder and they know you've got two kids, they might call you when the Harlem Globetrotters come to town because they realize that you like basketball. And let's face it, minor league hockey, the way you market a minor league hockey team and even the G League team, it's more about entertainment than it is team performance. So if I'm the sales rep and I call you, I want to know what you liked about the game. My guess is your kids had as much fun looking at some of the entertainment and the programming on the Jumbotron as they did watching the hockey game, right?
Oh, they absolutely did. They loved the first thing the girl said was, "Oh my gosh, look how big that TV is." I was like, "Yeah, it's it's huge." And then they had a Zamboni that fans were able to ride, which looks like a really cool experience. Graydon and I made it up onto the Jumbotron from a tweet that was sent out. So there's a lot of other things that are going on throughout the game that they were all about.
Right. And I'm just curious, this is your kid's first time to Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse?
That is the first time inside of Rocket Mortgage and their first hockey game.
All right. So now Rocket Sports Group is got a profile on you, okay? And if I'm the rep, I want to know if you had a good time at a Monsters game, but I also want to know what other things you and your family like to do. You know, have you ever been to a basketball game? Would you be interested in going to a Charge game over at Cleveland State where the Charge plays in the Wallstein Zone? So it's really building that one-to-one relationship so they can be they won't even any more ticket sales representatives or entertainment consultants. I want to be your person in that organization that can solve all of your entertainment needs. And I don't know, is there a concert that you could think of that your two kids would love to see if it ever came to Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse?
That the kids would love this. The girls are, I think, would be a little too young to pick a concert. Graydon would definitely Imagine Dragons. He'd be like, "Oh my God, we got to go." And I would have all to right. fight it on that. But
Gotcha. But you start to see the relationship that this ticket sales executive wants to build with you. And no one likes making cold calls. I mean, that is the one of the challenges of our industry, you know, the idea that you're going to make so many cold calls a day to be successful in tickets. But you were a warm call. You got a call because you had just gone to the game.
All right. So let's kind of change what we're talking about a little bit. So your vision on how ticket sales is going to fit into our program and how it's going to continue to evolve. I know there's been some things that we've done in the past that's a little like ticket sales. We were selling 50-50 raffle tickets, but how is ticket sales itself going to fit into the program?
All right. Well, first thing, the relationship that we've created with the Browns, allowing students like yourself to sell 50-50 tickets, does a couple of things. It gives you sales experience and numbers to put on your resume. So I'm happy to share with our audience that you are our number two sales rep with Browns 50-50 raffle ticket sales. Today, with your background, your personality, I could get you a job in ticket sales. And the reason I know I could get it is that those jobs are plentiful. And oftentimes, that is the entry-level position that many students will take coming out of an undergraduate program. The star of the show, though, is your fellow student, Eddie. Eddie's selling 50-50 raffle ticket sales. We get him over to Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse for the professional sales workshop that's hosted by the Cavs and Teamwork Online and Dr. Kadlicek. And Eddie goes through that 1 day training session, and his first job coming out of Cleveland State is an inside sales rep with the Washington Commanders. So for us, we're going to celebrate that. Eddie's the first person since we've started this program to land a ticket sales job, and he doesn't graduate till May. But I guarantee you getting that experience selling 50-50 raffle tickets helped his resume stand out when all the recruiters at that event were looking at him. But hey, Eddie's got an outgoing personality. He could go up to a fan. You saw him. He sold right next door to you and inside the stadium and could, you know, get people excited about buying their 50-50 raffle ticket. And, you know, one of our big nights down there, the jackpot was $180,000 that Monday night game against the Bengals.
Yeah. So selling the 50-50 raffle tickets was a lot of fun. It's a cool experience. But I'm kind of that person. I'm an outward guy. I'm not necessarily a salesman. I'm more of an energy type person. So for me, just talking to people is a fun thing to do. I like to interact with people, but not everybody is kind of built like I am. There are some people that maybe are not so outward or, what is the name for the
extroverted
person?
You are very much an extrovert, Mike.
Yeah. So I'm very extroverted, and some people just aren't. Does that mean that they can't have success, or they should probably steer clear of ticket sales?
No. So that's why we build it into the curriculum. Individuals that are more introverted tend to be more organized and more analytical. And the training that someone with that profile would get going to work for an organization like the Cavs or the Guardians or the Browns, it's really just having the discipline and the script. So today's world of ticket sales, the amount of training that you would get before you would ever make your first official call is pretty extensive. And the nice part about it is that the marketing departments of these teams are doing a great job of building a database of prospective buyers that like the example you use, you had recently been to a Monsters game, or maybe somebody enters a sweepstakes, or they pick up their name and email through other promotions on their websites. Those are what you want to do. Is you want to build a relationship with fans of the team, and your job is to work that fan from going to one game to maybe a group to a 10 game plan to a half season plan to full season tickets. And as we talked in class, that the individuals that are buying 10 game plans today are young. But if they're diehard fans, someday they might be the CEO of the company that's making a decision to buy a luxury suite because they know the value of entertaining customers, family and friends at a sports event or an entertainment event.
Cleveland State University's new Sports and Entertainment Management program, where students can turn their passion for sports and entertainment into a rewarding career, gain hands-on experience, and learn from industry experts in the rapidly growing field. Now, let's get back to the conversation. All right, Jim. So let's get back to the core of ticket sales. So how important are ticket sales to the core of what a franchise is trying to do to build out, you know, kind of what they want to see in their stadium, and obviously as it factors with revenue generation?
All right. So for our fans of this podcast and people that are sports fans in general, you know, as sports fans, what do we want? We want our general managers to go out and get the best athletes they can, to spend as much money against the salary cap as they can, and to do that. But to do that, teams have what I call local revenue streams, okay? And ticket sales from a local revenue stream standpoint are going to be the core of what I used to be responsible for at the Cavaliers. Like, how many millions of dollars can we bring in a given year in ticket sales? And those dollars are going to go right over to the player development side of the house. So the general manager can, you know, go do a deal where they can afford to sign a free agent or get into the right cap space so they can make a trade for a Donovan Mitchell. So every seat in the house adds up at the end of the season. So a typical NBA team is going to have close to 20,000 seats. And anytime a seat goes unsold, that's a lost opportunity for revenue. So the greatest number of employees with a team in any department on the business side is going to be the ticket sales staff that you put together.
Yeah, that ticket sales staff is obviously very important. So when someone acquires, you know, that experience in ticket sales, what other doors does that open for them career-wise?
Every door. So I say that because if you really want to understand a business, you got to start at the grassroots level. Ticket sales is that grassroots level. But let's use you as an example. Let's say you get in with the Cavaliers and you become their top inside sales rep. Okay. You're going to get promoted to a full-time rep a year later. And then after about 3 years, you're going to hit a fork in the road. And that fork is going to say, do I want to go into ticket sales management or explore other options? Because you have now proven yourself and you are a valuable employee. The other options, in a lot of cases, will lead people over to sponsorship sales. So we're not going to spend too much time in this podcast talking about sponsorships, but instead of selling multiple transactions in sponsorship sales, you might have a portfolio of 30 sponsors that you'd be responsible for. The example I like to give in class on where ticket sales can take you is that of a former intern of mine at the Cavaliers, Chad Estes. Today, Chad is the senior vice president, executive vice president of sales and marketing for the Dallas Cowboys in AT&T Stadium. It's a job that many would aspire to get to, but Chad had to start somewhere. Not only does he oversee all sales for the Cowboys and anything else going on in AT&T Stadium, but he's also responsible for going out and getting new events at AT&T Stadium. So if Dallas gets the Final Four, it's Chad and his group that are putting the bid in to bring the Final Four to AT&T Stadium. If they get the Super Bowl, it's Chad taking the lead to bring the Super Bowl there. So the reason I like to use Chad as an example, he's a Cleveland guy. And at the same time, he started right there in inside sales with the Cavaliers.
Okay. So, I mean, we're talking about different events. You said before, you know, anytime that the stadium or the venue is not being used, that's a chance that we're not making money. So right. if we're talking about, you know, these stadiums possibly being used all year long, which is the hope, depending on your venue, how much revenue are we generating as organizations? Like, what percentage of my revenue is coming from these ticket sales and all these extra events? Because it's not just sports when you have a stadium like that. It's all these entertainment events as well.
Yeah, and we talked about this in class. We'll get into it deeper in other podcasts. But 2019 was a critical year or pivotal year for our industry where, for the very first time, media rights became the number one revenue stream for professional sports. And media rights is nothing more than the amount of money that ESPN and others are going to pay the leagues to broadcast the games. That became number one. Ticket sales had always been number one. It slid down to number two. And then after that, you're going to have sponsorship and merchandising. But from a local standpoint, if you were to work for a team, the number one revenue driver for the team of local revenue will be ticket sales. And what you got to do is you got to look at the economics of the different leagues. When you look at average ticket prices, NFL is always going to be number one as long as I'm alive. And As you know, Mike, that's driven by number of occurrences. So the average ticket price in the NFL today is over $100. In the NBA, it's going to slide down. It's going to be in that $50 to $60 range. And then Major League Baseball, their prices are even lower. Major League Baseball probably in the mid $30 range. And number of occurrences have a lot to do with that. Because if you're the Guardians and you're trying to sell out Progressive Field, you got 80 home games. That's a lot of ticket inventory to go through. If you're the Cleveland Browns, you got what, eight or nine home games? Yep. And this is a football town, so it's easier to sell out 8 or 9 games.
And you bring that up, like, it is easier to sell out 8 or 9 games, but when you're trying to sell out 81 home games, you're going to have a little tougher time, which I think begs the argument that the Cleveland Guardians here, one of our local teams, is doing a pretty darn good job when it comes to ticket sales because they have to sell so many more games. And that's, we will every once in a while we'll see people saying maybe some not so nice things about that situation. But I think once people listen to this and you understand a little bit more about ticket sales, it will give you a little bit of insight that, okay, listen, I got to sell 81 games worth at for a capacity of what, 35 to 40,000 is what Progressive is now. So
right now I think they're more like at 42, but if you look at the upcoming renovation plans, they'll probably trim it to 35 or 36 because baseball is a great example of entertainment and a night out on the town. So what our Major League Baseball stadiums have turned into is the total entertainment experience. I like to use Petco Park in San Diego. So if I take you to a game there, it's a culinary experience where a baseball game breaks out. Because inside that stadium, they have so many different options for food and beverage, from sitting down for some fine dining to go getting some of the best street tacos you could imagine in San Diego. You're going to find it at a place like Petco. And now all the ballparks are going that. So what can they do to the environment to add to the main attraction, which is down on the field? Because that everybody is going to be a hardcore baseball fan that is going to sit in their seat for all 9 innings and take score. So you've got to find a way to renovate today's stadiums for the casual fans that are only going to come out to, 2 or 3 games a year.
Right. And that brings up an excellent point. Like, I've seen it in Rocket Mortgage, which is absolutely beautiful facility. I also love Progressive, but there is just so much to do around that area, like even inside the stadium, that you could sell tickets, $15 tickets, just to get people there, and they're still going to enjoy their time even though they're not the avid baseball fan or whatever it is. And Rocket Mortgage is an excellent example of that. I'm a big fan of sports gambling, and there is a Caesar Sportsbook right in that facility. And then now they've got you there. They've got you hooked. Maybe they can get you to buy some tickets as well.
Well, I just had the pleasure of touring the sports book over at Rocket Mortgage Caesars. And listen, if you want to see a sports bar that is tricked out with multiple TVs and multiple games going on, if you're 21 or older, and I'm not endorsing that you go out and gamble some of your hard-earned money, but you need to get over and see that sports book because they did a great job with that. And that's, you talk about creating extra programming for a building, that sports book is going to be open, year round, and it'll be open on a lot of nights when there's nothing going on in the arena. And the Cavaliers and the NBA are a little bit more progressive today than Major League Baseball. So, you could stop in that sports book before a Guardians game or on your way home. You want to let the traffic die down? Pop in the sports book and watch another game,
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously our goal, we're gonna fill up all of these stadiums every single time. That's the goal of every organization. And we got to figure out a way we're going to do that. Well, I just make all of the tickets the same price and let everybody in. But I've learned through my time at Cleveland State that is not the way it works. The blanket ticket prices are not going to work. You might get people there, but you're not going to make the kind of revenue that you should be making.
Excellent point, and I'm glad you remember that from class. But in the NBA, let's use the NBA because I've done more research there. They like to refer to the 80-20 rule. And then what's the 80-20 rule all about? 80% of an NBA's team's ticket revenue is going to come from only 20% of the inventory. So what have we learned over time? People will pay a premium to sit in that front row of an NBA game. Corporations will pay a premium to sit 14 rows off the court in the lower level suites of an NBA game. Folks like yourself, as you start to make more money coming out of college, you might pay more to sit in a club seat because you like the amenities that come with it. So blanket ticket prices don't work. We see them all too often in college sports, but the science behind carving up an NBA facility and maybe having 12 to 14 different classifications of ticket prices, there's a segmented audience for each of those areas. And let's face it, if you're not strategic, you're probably going to have fewer sellouts. And the goal of the sellout, I know you came back to that, is if you only went to one game a year and it was sold out and you remember the electricity in the building and that ticket sales rep calls you the next day, I want the list of people that attended sellouts, okay? Because that's, you know, even if you're sitting or you're sitting up in the rafters, you had a ticket to a game that was sold out and other people would have liked to have been there. So playoffs are right around the corner with the NBA. Well, when you can't get a ticket, it becomes more valuable. When you can't get a ticket, you're going to a secondary site and you might be paying 2, 3, 4 times the face value. So sellouts in this industry, and I go back to John Spoelstra, that is your... that's your goal if you're a marketer. How many sellouts in a given season can you create?
Yeah, you're going to want fans that obviously had a great experience, the people that went to sellouts. But, I mean, I know you have said this to me, and I believe it was Mr. Spoelstra that kind of said it originally, was make your big games big and the small. Don't worry about the smaller games. I don't remember the exact way it goes, but those games are going to be important.
I can help you out because he said it, not I. And I won't hope I don't get in any trouble saying, make your big games big. Let the dead dogs die. Don't go putting a lot of energy into a Tuesday night game against the worst opponent in your league. Put your energy into the game that is 85% at capacity. What can you do to turn that game into a sellout? That's where the energy needs to go.
All right. Yeah. And I think that's a really important lesson. I feel like that's one of those life lessons, like focus on the important things, the things that are big, focus on those, and then don't sweat the small stuff. It's a beautiful tie into life and sports and learning at Cleveland State University.
Well, I'm glad that you're plugging our program. I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of my job, you know, being here, helping with this. So,
yep.
Well, Jim, I don't have any other questions or any other things that I wanted to go over. Were there any other topics that you wanted to hit on before we get out of here and leave our listeners?
No, I think we covered it all today. You could beat ticket sales to death. But for those listeners and students that might be thinking about a career in sports, you got to know that. Couple of things. We'll close out with this, that 88% of individuals coming out of college with a marketing degree, their first job is going to be in sales. Okay. And 50% of college graduates in general, their first job in sales. So if you want to run a business someday, you got to learn it from the ground up And in the sport and entertainment industry, ticket sales is oftentimes that entry point and a great way to get a big understanding of the whole organization.
All right. Wise words. Jim, I thank you and appreciate you once again. The show is so much fun. We are going to be back with a new topic, and I'm excited. I'm excited to keep this thing rolling.
Vikings row together, Mike.
Yes, they do. Vikings do row together. Bye, guys.